Jonathan Myberg leads the Austin, Texas-based band Shearwater, and he joins us on the Cafe today. Early on, Jonathan and his friend Will Sheff were both in Shearwater and in Aucarville River. Before recording their last album, Palo Santo, Sheff left, deciding to concentrate on Aucarville River. Palo Santo was a breakthrough for the band, landing on year-end best-of lists for both the New York Times and NPR. The band's new album is called Rook, and I asked Jonathan if, like Palo Santo, which was about the Velvet Underground singer Nico, although a few people realize that theme, if there was an underlying theme about this new album.
Yeah, and there's certainly... I was reading a lot of Peter Matheson's books, and he's written beautifully about the natural world for the last almost 60 years. And I was thinking about the work that I've done doing bird research out in some remote places in the world, and just this, the thinking about the natural world and the ways that humans have changed and are changing it, and the ways in which the last little pockets of the world that existed before we were everywhere are disappearing. That's sort of what the album is preoccupied with, more than any one person like Palo Santo was.
Well, tell you what, let us begin with a live piece, and we can find out more than we need to. And perhaps one of the things I love about music is, of course, you get to figure it out yourself. But I mean, it is kind of fun to hear what things are about. I thought we would begin with you apparently are going to be able to do Leviathan Bound.
Yeah.
Has worn, and the snows have drained away, and the hunter's cry is still on the air as the bullet flies home, and the heart that's pierced with it still is racing, still is racing. The glittering skies, where the great dark body rides, and the trembling jaws, the unfathoming sounds of Leviathan bound, as his heart the weakening still is racing.
Leviathan Bound from our guest today, Shearwater on the World Cafe, and that is one of the songs from Rook, and we're talking with members of the band again today. Jonathan, what should we know about that?
Well, the first sound that you hear on that song is Thor's dulcimer.
Yes.
There, which I wanted Thor to tell you a little bit about that.
That dulcimer, it's just a simple slab of wood. I made it, and it's got real heavy gauge steel guitar strings tuned just in pairs. It's a really simple instrument.
It always makes people smile to see Thor playing it.
People ask about that thing a lot. And in about a minute, I can tell you how to build one yourself.
We were using a larger dulcimer for a while on tour, and then we realized that Thor was only playing 5 notes on it, so we made one that had 5 notes.
When we play live, we have a whole bunch of instruments, so we have to, if we're going to, and some of them are pretty unique, so if we're going to bring them, now that airlines are so strict about what you bring, we have to make everything as small as we possibly can.
Now, this album, when you look back at the certainly relative success of Palo Santo compared to what you guys had done before, that really, mm-hmm. for a lot of people, really put you on the map. Is it different to make an album that you know people are going to hear as opposed to, say, in the past where you were making an album that you might like and you just didn't know what was going to happen to it?
I kind of like the added pressure of doing that. It's nice to know that there are going to be people who listen to it, so it's sort of like showing up for your show and you come out and the hall is full of people, as opposed to when you show up and maybe there's 5 or 10 of them out there and maybe they don't really care. So I think it just increases the kind of feeling that you really want to do it right. And the other records before that kind of feel like training albums to me. Sort of we felt like we'd hit our stride on that. On Palo Santo.
If I have this right, Jonathan, Palo Santo is the first one that you didn't work with Will Sheff on. Is that at all significant?
I don't mean to suggest that somehow I got out from under Will's yoke and everything was great. It's just that there was a sort of a unity to that record that finally the band seemed like its own thing. And which Will agreed with, actually. I mean, I talked to him a lot while we were making that record. And with Rook, actually, once we had recorded all the tracks and mixed them all down, and I was trying to figure out how to sequence it, I took it over to Will and hadn't let him hear any of it until that point, and he helped me sequence the record, and he made some suggestions that were really helpful.
Let's get back to some performances as Shearwater are our guest today, and we're going to hear a version of The Snow Leopard, another one from Rook next. And Kevin Schneider, anything we should know about this one?
This is a really slimmed down version from different than it is on the record, I guess.
Wasting my body, my love. Well, I'll come away from the shadows. But can the sullen child, as bound as the ox that I ride, climb to the heart of the wide earth? Through more.
Snow Leopard from Shearwater, who are playing live for us today. All this music from Rook, the latest album. And here as we look back on 2008, one of the finest albums of the year. Jonathan, seeing as this is the first time we've had a chance to talk with you, I wanted to kind of explore something. I think if we were going to kind of look to the roots of your twin interests in ornithology and music. I've heard you say that the fact that you had a chance to travel on the Thomas J. Watson Fellowship, it kind of all came from that. Where did you go? What did you do? And how did birds and music come out of that?
That was back in 1997. I was just out of college, and I'd never left the southeastern United States. And I had applied for this grant to study community life at the ends of the earth. I just picked these six different locations that were as remote as I could possibly imagine on the globe. And I was astonished when they actually gave me this grant to do this. So I was 21 years old, and I got on a plane and went to Tierra del Fuego. And after that, I ended up figuring out that I could go to the Falklands from there, which it's not really very far. So I took a bus from Argentina into Chile and then took a flight to the Falklands and showed up at this little boarding house in Stanley. And I met an ornithologist there who was doing a study of this strange bird called the striated caracara that lived on the outer islands of the Falklands. And he needed an assistant. And I said, well, I'm free. I'd like to go. And I bugged him for a while, and he finally relented and it took me on this survey, which is 7 weeks in a We were in an old, like, built in the 1920s, little wooden boat out on these outermost islands of the Falklands, looking at these birds. And they live around, they're kind of a raptor. They're like they're sort of like a combination between a hawk and a crow. And they live around these colonies of albatrosses and penguins. And this was a scene I just had never even imagined. I didn't know the world had places like this in it. So that really, that turned me on to birds and opened my mind to the natural world in a way that it hadn't been before. And then the rest of that year, I went to all these other remote places in the world, in far northern Australia and some islands off New Zealand and an Inuit settlement in the Arctic. And when I came back from that, I really felt different about just about everything. And when I moved to Austin after that and started going to graduate school studying birds and started playing in bands. And I was astonished when the band started to overwhelm the science as far as what I was doing on a day-to-day basis.
Has that happened? Are you not studying anymore?
Well, I finished my degree, and the good thing about I ended up doing my degree studying this the bird that I met in the Falklands, and there's not very many people studying it right now. In fact, just about none. So it's been fairly easy to keep up with the people who are working on it, and I just try to keep tabs on what's going on down there and talk with people and try to encourage people to study that species. And I still go birding around here and meet with other people who are interested in birds here. So it's kind of taken a backseat to the music at the moment.
Jonathan, I can't believe that at 21 you were smart enough to pick all those places to go. That is just so
smart is not the word I would use. I was just, it just seemed like fun. It's one of those things where you get, it's like being in a band, I think. Sometimes it's really nice to not know what you're getting into.
One thing, a thing about Jonathan is that he is up for insane adventure. That's the one thing that drew me to him. He's like, well, all right.
Well, the thing is, you only have to be brave for that 5 minutes when you're making the decision,
And once, then once it's made, you kind of...
Yeah, once you're on the plane, you're not getting off.
Yeah, you're too busy trying to stay alive to rethink it.
Until later. Wow. Well, now, the song Rooks on the album Rook, stressing the fact that it's plural, there are a lot of dying birds in this song.
But not all of them.
No, and that's a point I wanted to make because, this album has... there's a darkness to it, but there does seem to be a bit of an uplift, and particularly, I guess, if you really listen to this song that comes out in this. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Sure. The people have called this song sort of an apocalyptic song, as if it's I'm just talking about that all the creatures of the world are dying. But the thing is, that's not really what it's about, and that's also not what's happening. The our the things that we do have reordered things in such a way that some species are privileged over others. Like, and everybody sees this. Like, you know, if you're in a city, you see lots of birds, but there are only four different species of them. You see pigeons, you know, maybe you see crows, you see house sparrows. And this, we're sort of in the process of making this new world where these species that had never had a resource like us to take advantage of have suddenly, you know, bloomed in numbers and in resourcefulness. And this song is about sort of that reordering that's going on right now. I think the idea of apocalypse that just people seem to be thinking about it a lot these days. The scariest thing is not the idea that the world will end, but that it'll change beyond our ability to recognize it. And we're in the process of making not the end of the world right now, but a new kind of world that's going to be different from what's come before. And I mean that in large measure, that's what the entire album is about. Both kind of it's hard not to feel some sadness or despair about that. Because we resist change, but at the same time, it's also an attempt to embrace that in some way.
So whatever happens, we don't know if it's encouraging or not, but it's going to be different. So,
yeah. Thor and I were talking about this the other day. It's that anytime someone says nature knows best, it's like, well, nature doesn't really know anything necessarily.
Right. Well, this is Rooks from Shearwater.
Of the road, crashing into the aerials, tangled in the laundry lines, and gathered in a field, they were burned in a feathering pile with a cold black eye. When the swallows fell from the the gulls from the spars, and starlings and the millions would feed on the ground where they lie. And the ambulance man said, "There's nowhere to flee for your life." So we stay inside and we'll sleep. Till the world of man is paralyzed.
Shearwater are playing live for us today, and that is Rooks from the album Rook. We were talking a bit with Jonathan and the band about about what that song is about. And that song kind of seems to be a bit of a kernel at the middle of what the whole album is about. So it's great to hear that.
Yeah.
Jonathan, we have to talk about your voice. it is so dramatic. There's such a lot of majesty in what Shearwater is. It kind of seems like all everybody else that plays relates somehow to your sing. Your singing is the origin of how you sing in classical or church music.
Yeah, it is. I sang in choirs. We went to the Episcopal Church when I was a kid. And I sang in the choir with my parents, and we were lucky to work with some really wonderful choir directors who loved, you know, Renaissance music. And I was introduced to the music of Palestrina and Byrd and Gibbon and Victoria. These really gorgeous vocal compositions that have been all but thrown out by the church all over the world, but they're still in use in a few little pockets. And so I came to love this stuff, and I think that's a lot of where my ideas about harmony and sort of structure come from, my sort of subconscious ideas about them. And then, you know, there's vocal technique where, you know, you learn when you're singing in that style to sing with very pure diction and vowels, and some of which is really an impediment to you if you're trying to sing in a rock band. So I've had to unlearn a lot of that stuff. But some of it also kind of comes in handy, and so I feel like I have these different voices kind of to choose from.
What a joy to have you guys here today. Thank you so much for playing live for us.
Well, thank you, David. It's really been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Shearwater, our guests, and we'll return in a moment here on the World Cafe.